Welcome to the Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting of September 18th. Will you please call the roll?
Committee Chair Peterson.
Here.
Director Darcy.
Here.
Director Gonzalez.
Here.
Chair, we have a call.
Thank you. Is there any public comments today? Okay. One of the first items here is the approval of the minutes of the Finance Administration and Operations Committee and executive session held on August 21st of 2013. Are there any comments? No, they're being done. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Executive Director.
I think my only job today is to introduce, of course, Mike Kelch, who will be... how can we describe your presentation about swaps, Mike? It's going to be riveting, I know.
Informative.
Informative. So he's going to be... we put together a little presentation on swaps, given some of the items that we have, but one of the items that we have on the agenda today. Mike, please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
As Christy mentioned, today we wanted to give you an update of our financing activities to date for 2013. At the beginning of the year, we kind of laid out a plan for the year, and we wanted to update you on that, as well as give you an overview of swaps and how we utilize them. And that's important today because we have an item on the agenda which is required as a result of some regulatory changes to name some firms as what we refer to as qualified independent representatives. They're financial advisors that will assist us in any swap analysis that we do, any derivative type of analysis that we do. So with respect to the update, recall we authorized $1 billion in bonds to fund new money or new projects for Move Illinois. We completed a $500 million bond issue in May successfully. It generated about $523 million in project proceeds at an interest rate of average interest rate of 4.1%. So that was favorable relative to our plan. We have $500 million of that authorization remaining. And it looks like right now it probably won't be necessary to issue that until the early part of 2014. So while we had planned for that to happen this year, we think now we can wait until early 2014. We also authorized $1 billion in bonds to advance for funds some fixed rate debt from 2005 and 2006. As you recall, we did complete a refunding of $217 million. There's about $800 million in authorization left. We were able to save a little over $13 million as a result of that transaction. And that's one we continue to monitor the market for opportunities. Finally, another item on the agenda that we've had, or another item on our list of potential activities that we've been following for some time, is we have authorization to refund or restructure synthetic fixed rate debt. Currently, those products are working well. We're paying under 5% on all of those structures, but there are risks associated with them, and you know, it was our and the board's desire to attempt to reduce the exposure to synthetic fixed rate debt should we reach a point where we can do it economically, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Other things that we've been doing, we've been managing liquidity or credit facility agreements. These are the bank agreements that underlie the variable rate bonds, which are part of the synthetic fixed rate structure, and we'll talk more about that later. But we've completed extensions of three agreements. We are working on a fourth that will expire in December. The one in December is for the 98 Series B bond. So we actually have synthetic fixed rate bonds that go back to 98 that we will be working on that agreement. And we have six agreements that will expire in the first quarter of 2014 that we'll also continue to work on. Also, we'd like to do is to review hedging strategies for additional Move Illinois bonds or financing that will occur in 2014 and beyond. We have achieved a good rate on our first issue. We will believe our second issue will come at a rate that's below what we had planned, but we want to look at options for trying to manage our interest rate risk for debt that we will need to issue in 2015 and beyond. So we will be looking at that. So, to talk a little bit more specifically about the swap agreements that we have, and a little quick background. When we talk about swaps, we're talking about a two-party agreement between the TOLE and a swap dealer, typically a large bank or investment banking institution, to exchange payments on dates per the terms specified in the agreement. And those payments can either be an exchange of floating rates, rates that vary each week or each month, or an exchange of a floating rate for a fixed rate. In the municipal market, the floating rates are commonly referred to as SIFMA, and in taxable market, it's called LIBOR. Those are the floating rate indexes that we will utilize as part of these products. Swap payments, or the exchange of payments, are calculated on the basis of a notional amount. So if you do a $200 million swap, you're not really exchanging a $200 million principal amount in any way. What you're exchanging is interest payments calculated on that notional amount, or that of $200 million. So you exchange the interest rate payments, you don't really have any exchange of principal. And finally, swaps are executed under the terms of a master agreement that's governed by, it's called an ISDA agreement, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association. So they're relatively standard types of agreements that can have modified terms. So, and it might be easier to see if you have a paper PowerPoint, but the synthetic fixed rate structure kind of works as follows. The TOLE issues variable rate bonds initially, and those reset weekly. And they tend to reset at a rate that's very close to what we call that SIFMA index, that municipal variable rate index, because that's an index of highly rated variable rate bonds, municipal variable rate bonds. So we issue variable rate bonds, and then want to, instead of accepting the variable rate exposure for the 25-year life of the bonds, we have decided that we wanted to swap that to a fixed rate exposure, or to fixed rate, essentially. So what we do is we agree with a counterparty to accept a payment equal to the SIFMA index each week, and then we will pay them a fixed rate for the term, the whole life of the bonds. So what you have is a payment from the swap counterparty that's equal to the SIFMA index, the variable rate index, that essentially matches, not perfectly, but essentially matches the variable rate we pay on our bonds. So we're essentially receiving from the counterparty an amount that will pay for the bonds. And then we agree to pay the counterparty a fixed rate that's determined in the swap market. Why would we do that instead of issuing fixed rate bonds? Because the all-in cost of this structure at the time that we executed these transactions was significantly less than the cost of just issuing traditional fixed rate debt. And as we mentioned, so that's the positive side of it. The economics, as long as they're working well, tend to be better than the traditional fixed rate bonds we issue. The downside of it, or the risks, are if there's something that goes wrong with a bank agreement or some other issue in the market where our variable rate goes up and the SIFMA index rate doesn't go up, our total cost of borrowing can increase. So, as a part of reviewing these structures and as a part of considering whether to restructure and at what rates, and as a part of considering what products we can use to hedge interest rates going forward, We have actually already engaged financial advisors. We currently have 4 financial advisors in our pool. 3 of those are transactional financial advisors that are assigned individually to each transaction, and the 4th is a general financial advisor that assists us throughout the year, not specific to a certain transaction. After the financial crisis of 2008, Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act, and the Commodities Future Trading Commission, CFTC, recently passed new rules to try to put an additional burden on swap dealers when they're dealing with what they call special entities. And those are typically governmental issuers. You can see they're federal agencies, states, state agencies, cities, counties, etc. And per that, those changes now, there are certain regulations that were imposed on swap dealers when they conduct business with special entities, and we're a special entity. Among those requirements, swap dealers will request that the tollway have an independent party or an independent representative, meaning independent from the swap dealer, to advise them on communications and matters related to swap and derivative transactions. So before they'll communicate with us, before they'll work on potential business transactions with us, under the new rules, they're requiring or requesting that the tollway assign or name qualified independent representatives, which are advisory firms that act in the interests of the tollway as you discuss these transactions. We have on our agenda today an item that would request approval of all 4 of those firms to act in that capacity. They've already been assigned to do that work, retained to do that work. But under the new rules, they need this designation to help us. Yes?
So in the RFP, when we qualified these 4 firms, this scope of work was in there?
It was.
Okay. All right.
So just to give you a sense for how much variable rate or synthetic fixed rate debt we have that includes swap agreements, it's about 30% of our entire debt portfolio, about $1.3 billion out of $4.4 billion. Our debt management policy or goal is to reduce that exposure to 25% or less. Actually, we'll be there soon because we expect to issue new debt as fixed rate. So that percentage will come down just naturally as a result of issuing new debt. This table shows the 5 kind of major series of synthetic fixed rate bonds that we have. 98, there's 2007 major series and 2008 A1 and A2. Each of them, as you can see, all-in costs. Each of them include all-in costs which are less than 5% at this time. That includes not only the fixed rate that we pay to the counterparty, which you can see under column D, but the liquidity, you know, the bank agreements that support the variable rate bonds, and the remarketing efforts, which is essentially a party that resells or remarkets or reprices the bonds each week. All-in costs, though, range from about 4.46 currently to up to 4.90. One of the things we note each quarter in our quarterly financial report, we also include this in our annual financial report, is the mark to market or the market valuation of the swaps should for some reason the swaps have to be terminated or have to be ended on a particular date. Not surprisingly, as is the case with many issuers, the swap valuations we have right now are negative mark-to-market. That means that for some reason we have to terminate these agreements, we would have to make a payment to the counterparty. Why is that? Well, that's because when we issued the swaps, And when we, the general interest rate market was higher than it is today. Okay. In fact, the swap rates that we have are lower than the swap than the traditional municipal bond rates that were in place at the time we issued them. However, general interest rates have come down, and as interest rates go down, you have to pay to get out of the agreement because you can substitute that agreement with a lower cost of borrowing. So even though this is a negative mark to market, much of the cost of that terminating that swap would be mitigated by the fact we could go back into the market currently and borrow at a lower rate of interest than we currently have. If interest rates generally were to go up, then that becomes less negative or positive. And in fact, this is actually a better mark to market than we've seen in the last year or so, and that's not necessarily good news for us. That means interest rates have gone up generally. And here we mention mark to markets typically decline in value when interest rates decline and increase when interest rates increase. And to the extent any negative valuation were to become realized, it's possible and that such a realized loss would be mitigated by a lower cost of borrowing in the market. So, on the synthetic fixed rate bonds, what are we monitoring in an effort to determine whether or not it's appropriate time to restructure those? The refunding or the restructuring of the synthetic fixed rate bonds isn't really a function of the general level of interest rates. I think you saw from the prior slide that if interest rates go down, that's good for us. We can borrow at a lower cost, but it also means the market goes up, right? So the total cost of getting out of the swap becomes more expensive. So we're not really monitoring whether or not these lines go up and down on the curve on the scale here. What we're monitoring is how close do these markets get together. And what we want is the bond market to be very close to the swap market. And the swap market typically has a lower rate. So we want them to get very close. We want these two rates here to be close. And as you can see, it became very wide back in 2008. It stayed relatively wide. We had one short period of time here in late 2012 where it looks like we could have executed if we'd gotten in right away. And now it's widened again, although in recent weeks it's starting to converge. So what we're monitoring is an all-in cost of borrowing. Our goal is, our target previously, as we discussed with the board, is to get an all-in cost of borrowing under a new fixed rate structure that would be 50 basis points, 0.5% or less, in excess of what we currently pay. Because we think that's worth paying a little bit more to eliminate the need to continue to renew these bank agreements and to continue to have the risk of something going wrong with the structure. We're not there yet. It's more like 100 basis points. Although I haven't looked at it in the last couple of weeks, so we'll be looking at that as well. Thank you. Is there any questions?
Are there any additional fees will these firms, advisors, require additional compensation for?
So the fee structure is set in the agreements that we currently have.
Okay.
And we're not requesting any additional fees. We anticipate paying no additional fees to have this designation. This designation really just allows them to act in a capacity that we had anticipated them working previously.
And as far as conflict of interest, have they basically all been vetted, so to speak?
Well, they will need to make representations as part of being named a qualified independent representative. They will have an obligation to make representations that they do not have a conflict, have a relationship with the swap dealer that would conflict with their role as a fiduciary for the tolling.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
We'll stay with finance, and we'll show you, I know you have two items, the one we just discussed, and the other is the approval of the payment of the Public Office of Auditor General. The audit.
The first item is approval of the payment to the Auditor General's Audit Expense Fund. It's in the amount of $548,328. It's the cost that the Auditor General incurs when they contract with KPMG to complete the 2012 audit. They have invoiced this, that amount. It represents their contractual obligation or contractual payments to KPMG. And we'd like your approval to make that payment to the audit expense.
That was the external audit?
The external audit, yeah.
So that came in under budget?
Yeah, we did budget $600,000. It came in about $50,000. And the second item we have discussed here, it's authorization actually to designate or name firms and the authority pool of financial advisors we would anticipate requesting all four to act as or to become qualified to act as qualified independent representatives on financial and transactions that involve derivatives.
Any questions on finance items 1 and 2? Any objection to taking those together? Okay, is there a motion to approve items 1 and 2 under finance?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves with full consent agenda. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
John, we're here.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
We have five items this morning for your consideration. The first item is an increase to an existing CMS master contracts for temporary staffing services. This increase is needed to cover our expenses through the end of this month. So even though the board delegated to us the CMS-led procurements under $250,000, this increase crosses the threshold, and that's why we're presenting it today. Award of this increase is recommended to Seville Staffing, LLC, in a total amount not to exceed $20,000. Second item is an award of a tollway invitation for bid to purchase aluminum extrusions. Our sign shop utilizes this material as a component as they create destination and guide signs that are used throughout our system. Now, this is a two-year contract, and we'll utilize it on an as-needed basis. Award is recommended to the lowest responsive bidder, MD Solutions Incorporated, in a total amount not to exceed $540,553.76. The third item is a request to renew our contract with SEPS Incorporated. They provide us with uninterruptible power source, UPS units, replacement parts, and installation services. These units are utilized at our toll plaza locations to power our toll collection computers and lane equipment in the event of a power failure. Award of this renewal is recommended to SEPS Incorporated in a total amount not to exceed $225,000 for a three-year period.
So this is for the, is this new or replacement of existing, the backup generators at these plazas?
So this is a renewal of the contract. So we've had this already in place for a few years, and the scope of the contract was to replace a lot of these UPS units throughout our main line and our ramps in our plaza locations. The majority of the work is complete already, but you know, we still have to replace, I think, 12 of the actual UPS units and several batteries throughout our system. But yeah, it does power the computers and lane equipment on the system. So this is very important to us. The fourth item is an award of a tollway request for proposals to purchase employee assistance program services. This contract provides voluntary, confidential, and professional counseling services to employees and members of their immediate family. We received four proposals to this RFP, and Perspectives Limited is a vendor that brings the best value to the tollway for the service. Award of this contract is recommended to Perspectives Limited in a total amount not to exceed $120,000 for a three-year period. The fifth and final item is a request for a sole source increase to our web-based online plan room contract with Accurate Repro. Our online plan room is a hub for contractors, other key stakeholders to purchase our highway construction plans upon being advertised. So when this contract was originally issued in 2011. This was before our Move Illinois Capital Program was publicly announced. So because of our Move Illinois Capital Program, there were a lot more contracts that were let, a lot more that were anticipated. And in addition to that, our unbundling effort and our small business initiative. So, you know, the size of these contracts being let, you know, 2012 moving forward all the way to today, dramatically increased beyond our expectations. And right now, we need this increase to hold us over until a new competitive RFP will be awarded. We anticipate to issue an RFP later this year. And again, since this increase that we're requesting today is greater than 20% of the original amount, the state considers this a sole source increase. So a hearing was held last Wednesday. No vendors or outside parties objected. In fact, we already received approval from our CPO that we can move forward. So award of this increase is recommended to Accurate Repro Incorporated in a total amount not to exceed $240,000.
And because the sole source is no the goal or committed goal on the diversity side?
That's correct. And, I was just going to say again, the reason for the sole source is because the increase is greater than 20% of the original amount.
Okay. And then the other items, back, I think Seville was the only one that had the 100% committed goal. The other ones didn't have the goals, or were able to include those?
That's the only firm that we're using that's in our region. There's separate, there's I think five or six regions throughout the state that supply temporary staffing, and our region is the, Seville holds the region in which we operate in.
On the, I don't know if it's the appropriate time or not, maybe we can talk about memo that you send out regarding the small purchase thresholds each month for us to review and take a look at. Are there these items, are they bid, these procurement side of these small items, these thresholds, are you bid most of these or bid out?
Yeah, so anything that's under 50,000, we blast out a request for quotation to all the vendors in the small business directory. So they all have an opportunity to participate in those procurements. And if the prices they bid is 10% higher than our historical prices, then we may send it out to larger organizations. But yeah, they're all competition. There's competition in all of them.
Do we have goals also with those small purchases?
You know, some of them we have placed, let me just say this. So our BEP program, CMS states that we have to place BEP goals in our procurements that are 250,000 and above. Again, all the ones under 50,000 are set aside for small businesses where applicable. So there's a range between the 50 and 250, and a determination needs to be made if it's appropriate to place goals on those individual contracts. So we have to look at them on a contract-by-contract basis. So some of them, there are opportunities, yes, but we don't place goals on all of them if it's not feasible.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Any questions on any items on procurement? Any objections to taking all five of those items together? So, do I have a motion to approve under procurement items 1 through 5?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves to the full consent agenda. Thanks, John.
Sure.
Engineering.
Good morning, Director.
Good morning, Paul.
Engineering has 10 items this morning. The first two items are for advanced construction contracts, which we're going to perform on I-90, on the eastern portion of I-90. Now, the first one is a construction contract for noise wall, retaining walls, and drainage improvements on the Jane Addams from the I-290 Illinois 53 interchange to Arlington Heights Road. That's 2.6 miles. We got six bids on this contract. IHC Construction Companies was the lowest bidder at $21,817,473.10. They're committing to meet our DB goal. IHC doesn't have any prime work with us right now, and you can see we're getting really good bids on this contract.
A question for you. On the noise and abatement retaining walls, have there been improvements with the materials or structurally with those as over the last few years? Reducing the decibel level? Have there any been improvements in the material use? Or
I don't believe that we are aware of any improvements in the materials. However, I will tell you that we do have an open specification for our noise wall, which allows the contractor to choose the type, and we specify like what type of reductions we expect it to deliver to us, so they have to prove that it